Our podcast will begin in just a moment. InvestTalk Distribution made possible by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. Let's point out one of KPP Financial's investment programs. This one is Balanced Income. It's steady yield for those who want to go easy on the risk. This investment approach primarily focuses on attaining an income stream through stable dividend-paying companies and quality corporate bonds. See more about it if you'd like on investtalk.com. Just click on the investment tab. End of commercial. And now, today's InvestTalk.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Tuesday edition, April 19th of InvestTalk. I appreciate you being with me. Of course, it's about above average investing for the average investor. You're a vital element in InvestTalk, everybody. I depend on you to tell us what money topics are important to you. The idea is to provide you with a steady source of answers each day, but answers to things you want to know. Now, we have this hour together, so I hope you'll feel welcome to join in the discussion. I really appreciate it. We talk about individual stocks, mutual funds, exchange-traded funds, ETFs, closed-end funds. But, you know, what matters just as much is how you put these choices together in a portfolio. Not just what you're picking, one thing or this thing or several things at a time, but how you put them together. Keep them in balance. How that works. So if I'd like to hear your mix or your portfolio. What asset classes and sectors are you represented right now? What's in your portfolio? You've heard me talk about we have gold positions. I'm not a big gold person, but I have had gold now for 6 months, a year. And when I first started buying them, they weren't working. Now they're working great. You heard me talk about buying big oil, you know, starting in January. I was thinking, well, it looks like oil is starting to bottom. So I'm not always right. I'm not. Trust me about this. But, you know, there's times to be cautious. I still have my shorts on. Of course, those are not working now, are they? They haven't where they work great in January. But ever since the market started to go up and up and up, I still have them as a hedge against a falling market. I still have them. I don't know if I'm going to get rid of them anytime soon. Not this time of the year. So you've heard me talk about things, about what we own and types of things I want or like or think are good. And, you know, have rules. Never buy stocks that don't make money. There are certain rules I have. But we're going to talk today a bit about mutual funds today. Getting the best returns out of mutual funds isn't just a matter of finding and buying the best funds, but, you know, with the highest returns. But you can get better returns. It's all within your control if you're in a mutual fund investor. Okay? And many investors don't realize that higher returns are more within their own control. Instead of searching for the top performing funds, that's not what I'm talking about. Because buying the top performing funds of last year usually means not the top performing funds of this year. There are other things you can do to optimize return. So we're going to look at that. There's some suggestions for that. And it's from Kent Thune of About Money, and maybe add some ideas too. Now, we want to help you escape the ranks of the average investor, avoiding mistakes that can cost you money. That's very, very important. If you can avoid major mistakes, it's much easier to make money in the stock market. Okay, buy and sell and decisions, decide first objective to keep the money we have and avoid taking backward steps. That, you can, you know, it's all about buying and selling things, but trying to avoid the big mistakes. And one of the common biggest mistakes and temptation is buying a tip from a friend or somebody else. Somebody at work or family get together, tells you about a stock they heard about. Never, ever, ever buy a tip. The information that you're getting from a tip is already ancient by the time you hear it. It's old. I guess you wouldn't have heard about it. So don't be buying tips, not even from TV shows you're watching. Remember, media tips is often founded on nothing more than speculative gambling. Tips. Don't do that. And the best advice I can give you is do your own homework. Measure the information and opinions you're getting against facts. Learn the basics. Stay true to your goals. Don't try to get rich quick. It doesn't happen. Stay diversified. Now, I'd love to hear about your portfolio. Is your number one goal safety, not growth? Do you think your portfolio is the best possible mix of assets to achieve safety? Do you think you want to be safe? Let's talk about it. As I said, Invest Talk is a question and answer program. We're here to try to help you answer some of the more important money questions of the day in your life. 888-99-CHARGE is our anytime number. Money-related questions are always welcome. So let's take a question right now.
Hey, Steve and Justin. After today's rally with the gold miners, do you think they continue higher since silver is now breaking out and the dollar is continuing lower and broke through some support today? I also want to thank you guys for an 80% gain in Hecla Mining over a three-month period. I sold my position today, and remember you guys saying a while back you took some profit. Should I look to get back in on a pullback since it's gone up so quickly, even with the Fed saying they are still planning on raising rates twice this year, which could push commodities lower and the dollar higher? I'll be listening on the podcast. Thanks.
Hecla Mining was symbol is HL. We own that one still. And we did take profits a couple weeks ago, in one of our mining companies. We still own Hecla. It was up 15% today, 14.93% today. It's been moving up off the bottom it made in January pretty consistently. Really big move today. And usually a big move today, they give back some of that, people. So don't think it's just going to stay there. So it was a good idea to take some profits off today if you did. Do I think gold is going higher? Well, you know, he mentioned the dollar. Gold has been trading kind of in a sideways pattern for a couple of months, but the miners haven't. They've been moving up pretty steadily. And the dollar is retesting its lows it made just about, April 11th or so. I mean, here it is, April 19th, 7 days ago or so, 8 days ago. Made a low for the year anyways. And it retested that. And now the question is, when the dollar gets weak, gold goes up. It's one of the reasons why gold will go up, is the dollar weakness. The dollar has been getting weak ever since December. Been falling. Now remember, the dollar rose last year most of the year. And that caused problems with our exports. But it's been falling recently. And you have to ask yourself, why is it falling? Why is the dollar falling? Doesn't seem logical when Europe is not turning around. But see, what happened is Europe is embarking on more and more QE, and so is Japan. And so they're trying to spark their economy, where our Federal Reserve is raising interest rates, which would normally slow down the economy. So what's happening is the dollar traders, the currency traders, are anticipating better times in other currencies, better economies, and while our economy, is embarking on maybe the Fed trying to slow it down a little bit. Well, the Fed is not trying to slow it down. They're just raising interest rates. The result might be a slowdown in the economy, but they don't want to slow it down. That's not their point. They're just trying to get off the 0% interest rates, which, is a goal they need to achieve. But the dollar's been weakening, and that means gold has been going up. Now, will it continue? It's hard to know. I wish I knew. I don't know. I just thought gold was way, way oversold. Now it's getting to a point where, could it be overbought? We talked about I'm not talking about underpriced or overpriced. I'm talking about oversold and overbought. Two different things. One has to do with momentum of stock. We talked about this the other day on, it's a talking point. So, how to squeeze out every possible ounce of return on your mutual funds. That's our main talking point today. Also, I want to talk about, which is always interesting this time of year, who pays the most income taxes? What group pays the most? What group pays the least? Got some statistics to help to share with you. Well, if you want to stay mentally sharp in retirement, many experts are finding this is what you should do. Work. And finally, did you hear about Intel layoffs? They're going to lay off a huge number of people, over 10% of their workforce. I want to talk about that a little bit too. Those are the things I'm going to discuss with you. The market was, what did it do today? It was mixed. The Dow was up. And if I remember right, in IBM was down, is a pretty good pretty big component of the Dow, and it was down, which knocked off like 30 or 40 points off the Dow, and the Dow still ended up being up 49 points. So the Dow was up today. The S&P was up 6, but the NASDAQ was down almost 20 points, 0.5%. Kind of interesting, because that's a pretty big fall for the NASDAQ when the other two are up. It's kind of unusual. Why? Well, there were some not the greatest news. I think Netflix had good numbers, but their CEO said ratcheted down expectations for the next quarter. So, is it just, if you're paying attention, you'll hear beating expectations. A lot of earnings are coming out, and they're beating first quarter, and their corporations are beating for their earnings expectations, but are well behind sales and earnings from a year-over-year basis. Growth is pretty anemic. We're glad you're with us today for Invest Talk. I'm Financial Advisor Steve Peasley. A big thank you to those of you who joined us last Thursday for our free wealth webinar. If you missed it and want to benefit from the information, why not sign up as an Invest Talk Insider? We have an Invest Talk Insider program. It's free. Just go to investtalk.com and click on Invest Talk tab.
Hi, Steve. Hi, Justin. This is Bruce from New York. I'm a daily podcast listener of your excellent show. I'm looking for a higher yielding investment in the oil industry and came across the convertible preferred stock of Kinder Morgan. It is paying 11% and converts to 2 shares of stock in about 2 years. The symbol of this convertible preferred is KMI.PRA or KMI.A. I was wondering if you could discuss the advantages, disadvantages of this type of investment and what an investor should look out for. It would also be great if you could discuss KMI.A specifically. Thanks very much for your terrific show. Bye-bye.
Well, unfortunately, I can't get a lot of information on a particular preferred situation because they're pretty, it's difficult. The data, you have to do a lot more research. But KMI, whenever you buy a preferred or convertible preferred, and a convertible means you're buying a preferred stock that converts to a common stock in a couple of years. Whenever you're looking at any preferred or a convertible preferred, you really need to look at the underlying company to see if it's strong enough because you're looking for it to survive. So you look at Kinder Morgan. Now, it's a $42 billion company. It's probably going to survive. Now, the earnings are going down and sales, the earnings are going to turn around next year. But they're going from 75 cents a share last year to 71 cents a share this year, and then to 82 cents a share next year. So what you're looking at, and the sales have been coming down, but Kinder Morgan Corp provides natural gas transportation storage services in North America. So that's what we have here. You have a company that's in an area that's not doing very well, and therefore the company is not doing very well, but it's big enough to survive. Now, I do worry that it carries quite a bit of debt. And it acquired 15 refined product terminals from BP Products in North America. So it's adding to its debt, but it's buying assets it thinks are going to go up, and probably is if you can survive long enough. So that's the same thing with the convertible preferred. If it survives, you do well. And I think it will. This is Invest Talk, a place to talk about your money, the various aspects of your money. 888-99-CHART is our number. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Love to talk to you. So how do you maximize your returns with mutual funds? How do you do it? Well, first, number one rule, I've talked about it over and over and over, buy no load mutual funds. If you buy a loaded fund, you're behind the eight ball already starting off. I mean, if it's an A share of loaded fund, they take 5% off the top as soon as you put the money in. You put $100,000 in, you only $95,000 is going to be invested. The other five goes right in the funds, the salesman's pocket. So you got to go. You got to gain more than 6% the first year just to break even. Why do I say six? Why I said the commission's five? Well, because there's a load inside because there's a fee inside the fund. Usually 1%, sometimes much less if you buy Vanguard, but Vanguard's no load fund, so you wouldn't pay the commission anyways. So that's one way. Make sure you understand what funds you're buying, what you own. Use index funds. They're usually cheaper. Okay, their costs are cheaper. So why not use them? You know, most money managers don't outperform the index fund. So why not use mutual? If you're going to be a mutual fund buyer, buy an index fund. Dollar cost average into your mutual funds. That means buy the same amount every pay period or once a month. Just keep buying and buying over time, whether the market goes up and down over time. And, you know, it's the best way to put money over time in the mutual funds. I see so many portfolios hardly invested at all, or maybe 50% invested, and they're not, because they're scared. We're scared. You're scared to invest. And I understand that, but you got to get over that fear. If you're going to be a good investor, you're going to maximize your returns, you need to not be fearful. When everybody else is fearful, you need to be a buyer. Well, one way, and when everybody else is happy, you should be a seller. Well, one way to avoid that, being when to get in, when to get out, it's just dollar cost average in over time. And just keep doing it. Forget about the market itself. Keep doing it. Buy the best types of funds, especially if you're buying aggressive mutual funds. Buy the best types. Find out who, you know, which ones, what managers, which types of funds are the best, and buy them. It's not that hard to find them. And make sure you asset allocate. Don't put too much in any one thing. Any one part of the market, even in mutual funds, not too much any one part of the market. Those are ways you can maximize returns on mutual funds. Let's get back to the phones. We get questions before and after the program, and we try to answer them as soon as we can. 888-99-CHART.
Hi, guys. This is Bruce from Texas. Great show. Learn a lot. Reinforces my understanding. One of the questions I had regarding retirement. Some background, I'm retired now, and I'll soon be 65. I have not taken Social Security yet. I have a 27 years left on a 3.5 fixed mortgage of our dream house, which we plan to stay there for a lifetime. Questions come in with my 401. I heard from you guys it's not a good idea to try to carry a mortgage into retirement. So I can pay off the mortgage in about four-year increments, increasing my 401 withdrawal and still staying within the 25% tax bracket. This would leave enough plus the Social Security to live just fine and not worry about the economy affecting my ability to pay house payments. Should I do this? Pros and cons to that. The second question is, with no more income, will Social Security payments increase, and to what level from what I would get now? So it would be better off to hold off as long as I can withdrawing Social Security and just keep using the 401 until, say, maybe age 68. Any reinforcement of what I'm planning to do or any ideas, I really appreciate it. Great show, very informative. Thanks, guys. Again, this is Bruce from Texas.
Okay, let's talk about the Social Security. If your full retirement age is 66, let's just say it is, if you wait every year, you wait to age 70, you get 8% more per month. So the longer you delay it up until age 70, the more you'll get per month. And it increases 8% a year, which is a pretty good return, and tells me you should wait as long as you can, because that's, you know. And think about it this way. Also, Social Security increases over time with COLA, cost of living index. And therefore, the higher, more money you get, you know, it's going to, let's say it increases 2% this year. Well, 2% of a higher monthly number is a lot better than 2% of a lower healthy monthly number. So why not? You know, so you're getting more money that way as it keeps up, it tries to keep up with inflation. So those are things I would do. Now, what should you pay off the mortgage? At 3.5%, that's very, very low. We all know that. And it's a tough question because I am very much pro paying off the mortgage. Don't have a mortgage in retirement. And the reason being is because it's difficult to maintain the mortgage because you see how I'm fixed income. But, you know, then you got, well, can I make more money, more than 3.5% investing the money? Well, you can, but you also take more risk. That's a tough call. My gut feeling tells me pay off the mortgage, in retirement. You're listening to InvestTalk. Have you used our free risk analysis tool on InvestTalk.com? It's an eye-opener. Just click on the InvestTalk tab on InvestTalk.com. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number. You can call it right now.
We thank you for subscribing to our podcast. Remember, InvestTalk is a ready source of answers, and you can ask your question anytime, 24 hours a day. Leave your question on the listener line if you want it included on the podcast, or send a note directly. Click on Contact Steve or Contact Justin on InvestTalk.com. Continue now with this Tuesday, April 19th Invest Talk. With a little time devoted to learning and research, investors can become well equipped to control their own portfolio and investing decisions and be profitable. Steve can help you. Check in now with your questions, 888-99-CHART or anytime, 24 hours a day.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. I always think it's fun this time of year to find out who pays what in income taxes and to share it with you. And here's some interesting stats. 45% of working households pay no income tax. 45% pay no federal income tax. I don't know about state, but we're just talking about federal. Okay, so... And of that 45%, half of them have no taxable income, and the other half have tax breaks to drop them down far enough where they don't have to pay federal income tax. That means the other side of that pays all the income tax, right? 54, 55, whatever it is, 50, it's not quite, 50, it's not quite 55, but it's a little bit less. And, because that means you people who make income, you're one of the half of the population of households that pay income tax. The rest don't. One percenters, how everybody's the highest income people and everybody whines how little tax they pay? Just so you know, one percenters pays the highest effective tax rate than any other group, the top 1%. Now, it's 23%. It's not the maximum, that's what it is, but it's 23%. And by the way, that's 7 times more than those on the bottom 50% of the half the people that pay income tax. 7 times more. Top 1% of income earners making about $1.2 million or so pay 43.6 of all federal income tax. So the 1% pays 43% of all income tax, top 1%. The top 20% of earners pay 87% of all income tax. So when someone tells you that the rich are not paying enough, this is the problem. When they talk about the rich, you got to make a differentiation between income producing rich, people who are working for an income, wealthy, the wealthy that earn income versus the wealthy that makes money on their investments, which are the truly rich people. They don't pay any income tax. They don't get income. They pay very little. They have capital gains tax. They own a company and they sell pieces of the company off and they get money, whatever. They don't pay income tax. So you really got to, in your mind, remember that when they talk about, well, the wealthy are not paying it. Well, the wealthy who make income do, but the wealthy who don't. So somehow we got to make it a different, you know, we have to differentiate that in our tax code, and we don't. We don't. Just pointing it out. So top 20% of earners of income pay 87% of all the income tax. So it's kind of hard to say they don't pay their fair share, isn't it? Because you're not differentiating. When the politicians start talking about it, they need to hit the wealthy, the truly wealthy, the ones who own huge amounts of assets. Those are the people who need to start paying, not the working stiff. Just my opinion. 888-99-CHART, tops on our list of priorities is your call. Bring your questions to us anytime you want. 888-99-CHART.
Hi, I'm a podcast listener from New York, and I wanted to know your opinion on, well, the stock that everyone knows, Apple. I bought it in February and January around when it was very low, around like 90, 96, 97. It's been doing very well. Wanted to know if you guys think that I should start to pull out a little or just stick with it. Thank you very much. I love your show, and keep up.
I'm going to hold on to Apple. We own it in our stock managed account. I'm going to hold on to it. We've had it for some years now. I'm going to hold on to it simply because it's still earning lots of money. It still has lots of money. It's still growing. And, you know, it's in between cycles, phone cycles. And so there's a part of me that if it gets up to about 130 like it was a year or so ago, I might cut it back, you know, like I've done before. But at 106 where it is now, I don't think so. I that doesn't mean it's going to go up just because I'm still going to hold on to it. It could go down. It could go down and retest that 95 area. Wouldn't surprise me if it did. But I don't think I'd sell it. So if you're wanting to be a trader, let's say you're a trader and you're not an investor and you want to, you know, trade this, then you would sell it. You would sell it now because it peaked at 112. Now it's 106. So it's down, you know, what, 5%. And it broke above the 200-day moving average, and now just recently broke below it a couple of days ago. This is where you would say, okay, I'm out. That would be a good stop out right here. Then it gets back down to 95 and shows that it's holding that 95. You get back in if you're a trader. If you're a long-term investor, you know, you just hold on to it until you think it's, you know, it's not going to go up anymore. Just so you know, the PE is 11. It's going to make $10 a share next year. Okay, it's $106 stock. So it's very inexpensive. You'll look at the debt that they have. They have some debt, but they only have that debt because they don't want to bring the profits back to the U.S. shores, and they wanted to pay a dividend, and the debt was so cheap, it made more sense to do it this way. And that's what they did. So, you know, I still like it. Its growth rate is not what it used to be. It's becoming a big blue chip stock. I'm hoping they'll start increasing dividends even more. I mean, I think they should, but we'll see. So if you're a trader, you get out now because it's broken some resistance. It's broken some support. And I take the profits now. But if you're a long-term investor, I would hold on to it. I'm going to hold on to it. So let's take a minute for InvestTalk 101. The price you pay for returns is risk. The price you pay for returns on your investment is risk. In order to increase the rate of an investment return, you have to take more and more risk. It's as simple as that. If you're talking about bonds, you know, you can go through the various quality of bonds, you know, investment grade to junk, junk being the worst, and high quality investment grades. And, you know, they're rated AAA, AA, single A, BBB, you know. So their bonds are rated. And the worse the rate is, the more yield they should pay to you, but the more risk there is too. Okay, so you always have to understand the return you get on something. If you're looking at a dividend paying stock or a bond and they're paying huge percentages, try to equate to how much risk I am taking. The higher the percentage they're paying, the more risk you're taking. It's that simple. Now, what's the risk? Well, in corporate bonds, they can go out of business and you're screwed. You get nothing, or you get just pennies on a dollar. You don't know. And of course, junk bonds have a high default rate in recessions. I mean, 20%+ of junk bonds default in recessions. So you got to be really conscious. So how much risk, how much reward should you get out of for that risk of a possible default? So try our risk analysis tool on investtalk.com. It takes about 3 minutes and you'll have a clear picture of your own capacity for risk. It's right there on investtalk.com. Click on the InvestTalk tab.
Life insurance. It can sure get complicated. Understanding life insurance, it's one of Steve's info sheets that can clear things up for you. When you're an InvestTalk insider, you have access to these info sheets and much more. So join up on investtalk.com.
Hi, guys. I'm calling in with a question on a couple of stocks that I currently own. The first is Cisco and Microsoft. Wanted to see what your opinion is for the year, whether to continue to hold or not. I'll be listening for your answers. Thank you for your show.
Cisco Systems, I'm assuming it's CSCO, which is not different from the Cisco, which is the food delivery, food distribution company. Of course, Cisco Systems manufactures switches, routers, and others. Microsoft and Cisco are now blue chip stocks. You can't look at them as growth like you could 10 years ago. They're not growth stocks anymore. Yes, they can grow, but usually it's single digits, and Cisco is growing between 0 and 5% sales. Same way with earnings. It's a 12 PE. It's going to make $2.30 this year, up 4%, $2.38 next year, up another 3%, pays a 3.7% dividend. It's right now up at resistance level at $28.33. It's been kind of in this area for a couple of years, between, you know, 24 and 28. And I think that's probably where it's going to stay. So, you know, if you're holding it for the dividend, you just hold it for the long term. Now, Microsoft is a different kind of company, you know, software systems, operating systems, you know that. Microsoft sales are shrinking 5 to 10% a quarter, and its earnings are going up 6 to 10% a year. So they're cutting costs. Cutting costs. That's the only way they can do that. But they're much more expensive than Cisco. Microsoft is more expensive than Cisco. And the chart looks better, too. I'm not sure why. Pays 2.6% dividend. They don't have much debt. And, you know, 21 PE in the range, 5-year range is 9 to 21, so that's right at the high. So chances are good that it's probably not going to go much higher than where it is. It's hitting some resistance right here. We'll see if it breaks through. Breaks through, I don't know where it's going to go. Good, solid, two companies are good, solid blue chip stocks. What you can say about them. 888-99-CHART. Excuse me. Okay, well, let's talk about Intel. We were talking about Cisco, we were talking about and Microsoft. Let's talk about Intel. They announced job cuts of 12,000 jobs, or 11% of their worldwide workforce. 12,000 jobs. Now, they are lowering their revenue growth forecast for this year. Intel. Sales growth has gone up, but not nearly as much as they thought it would. But it's gone up. They're restructuring away from computer-based chips to cloud-based chips or servers or whatever you want to call them, because that makes perfect sense. That's where the growth is. If they want to continue, and that's where the future is. Yep. It's just common sense. But I find it interesting that their volume and sales was down 15%, but the prices rose 19%, so it doesn't look too bad on their earnings report. So they're able to raise the prices, but their volume growth shrank sharply. And, you know, this is a concern. We should sit back and ask your question, why is that happening to a company like Intel, worldwide huge chip maker? Why should their volumes of sales be shrinking? And why would the stock or the stock market, if that's true not for Intel, but who else? And remember, what was the other bellwether that starts the earnings season? Of course, is Alcoa. Same kind of issue. and the worldwide sales are not doing very good, why would the stock market keep going up? What catalyst can we get? We need growth somewhere. We need growth. Worldwide growth, European growth, China. We need some growth. We need something to turn. And we don't have it yet. And the longer nothing turns, something news is going to come out and be a very bad surprise. And I only say this because after watching the market for 40 years, something always happens. I just can't tell you what it will be. I can't tell you when it will be. I can look, use history, which I do a lot, as you know, on this show, and tell you what tends to happen. And I can tell you there's the chances of something out of left field causing problems is pretty high. Pretty high. Doesn't have to happen. Plus, we're in a re-election year. There's, you know, and there's a brand new president, not a re-election of an existing president, a brand new one, though it's a second-term re-election, election cycle, not re-election, but election cycle. And those have never been very good for the market. Haven't been so far, all of them. Every second-term election cycle year has been poor. Doesn't mean it's going to be disastrous. I'm not predicting that. I'm predicting that we're going to have a correction sometime between here and probably October, November. There's going to be a decent-sized correction. Now, you can hold me to that. If we're at November 1st and we haven't seen a decent correction, then I'm going to have to sit here and say, well, I guess I was wrong. And believe me, I have been wrong in the past. I just don't think so on this situation. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. We are in the middle of earnings season for the first quarter. Numbers are coming out, pouring in. And there's a lot of numbers beating their earnings estimates. But those earnings estimates have been ratcheted down all quarter. So they're not very strong. And the earnings in sales year over year is pretty anemic. Not very good. You're listening to Vest Talk. I'm registered investment advisor Steve Peasley. I'm here to answer your questions, money questions, any money questions you might have. So get your call into us, please. Our Vest Talk Anytime number is 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART.
Good advice. Spread your money around. Stick to a well-thought-out plan for carefully divvying up your money so no single calamity will destroy your portfolio. Want to talk about it? 888-99-CHART is how to get through right now.
Hi, Robbie. How you doing? From Santa Clara. Want to talk about Wells Fargo. How's it going?
Hi, Steve. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
So, by looking at this, the oil going down, I mean, how the growth prospect, right, the Wells Fargo. Okay. I have invested in the Wells Fargo around 46, 45. So they are more exposed to the oil companies, right? So the oil companies do bankrupt. So in the near future, that's what people are predicting.
Yeah.
By looking in terms of how the growth prospect of Wells Fargo, right, I would like to hear from you.
Okay. It's Wells Fargo, everybody. Wells Fargo Company, diversified financial service holding company with 8,700 offices throughout the U.S. and worldwide. And as Rabia was talking about, the worry is the exposure to shale oil companies and the amount of money they lent to those companies. And how's that going to affect all the banking industry, not just Wells Fargo? And I'm not quite sure, Ruby, how much Wells Fargo has exposed themselves to that area. I just don't know. But looking at the raw numbers, it looks pretty decent. They're going to make $4.14 this year. That's about the same as last year. And then allegedly make another 7% next year. And sales growth is growing between 1% and 5% every quarter. And it doesn't look extremely expensive with a PE ratio. You know, it's a $49 stock going to make $4.44. So what is that, 11 PE? High 10, maybe 11 PE? So it's not expensive paying 3% dividend. So I think you need to hold on to it at this where it is now, because I don't think it's overpriced. And it's, whatever the exposure is to shale oil, whatever that is, that would be your biggest fear. But it's also well known. Everybody knows that there's exposure there. So maybe that is already built into the price of stock. Yeah. So, So I would hold on to it at this point. If you're going to, if you're really worried about it, when it breaks that low it made in February, that's when you would want to get out, and that's about $45. It's $49.88 now.
Okay.
If you're really worried about it. Thanks, Ruby. I appreciate the call. WFC is the symbol, everybody. Wells Fargo Company, WFC. 888-99-CHART. If you want to stay mentally sharp as you age, studies are starting to show that you should be working part-time. Part-time, not full-time, part-time. There was a Japanese and Australian universities got together and did some studies, and they said 24-hour work week was the optimal mental stimulation. Because when you sit around the house and do absolutely nothing except stare at the walls or the TV or whatever, and you're not getting any stimulation. So they said that that was what is about what you should do, 24 hours a week. UCLA Longevity Center, Gary Small, says full-time work and increases your stress level, but also early retirement increases your stress level. So he's saying these two, this early retirement and full-time work stress, probably, you know, because he's an Alzheimer's guy. That's what he does research on. These are risk factors that increase Alzheimer's disease. And he was looking at people age 40 and up. That's what he was looking at. So, well, maybe we should all work 25 hours a week beginning from the day one. Wouldn't that be nice? Of course, you can't live, but that's beside the point, right? So, if you want to reduce stress, but still stay mentally stimulated, a 25-hour work week is probably the best, according to these guys. So, what do you think? The problem is most of us can't do that. How do you say it? Well, do you go to your boss and say, I think I only want to work 24 hours a week now? What? No. You know, 40-hour a week is what's normal, and most people work more than that. More than that. I know I do. Our time is up. I hope this was a productive hour for you. If you have a question you'd like to ask me directly, you can go to investtalk.com. That's two T's. Investtalk.com and click on Contact Steve. That's an email that comes directly to my desk. I will get back to you, I promise. I'm Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Justin Klein and everyone at KPP, thank you for listening today. Let's meet up again on the next Invest Talk.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.